This is a podcast from WOR.
Now before 9 o'clock here on the John Gambling Show. What's the drug scene in New Jersey? Well, according to one man, it's a lot worse off than maybe we think. Frank Greenagle is with us, panel chairman, task force on heroin and other opiate use in New Jersey. Hey, Frank, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thank you very much for having me on today.
You bet. Now, what was your goal here, and what did you find?
Well, the goal, there's a huge problem with opiates, and well, right now we're concentrating looking at how it's affecting 25-year-olds and younger, but of course, we're not going to ignore what's going on with people older than that. So Governor Christie, who's very dedicated to dealing with this issue, created a task force, and we had our first task force hearing on May 29th in Trenton. We heard from parents, we heard from academics, we heard from the DEA, we heard from local street cops, and what we found is that in the last 2 years alone, just in New Jersey in the last 2 years, opiate treatment for people that are 25 years or younger has gone up by 79%, and heroin treatment has gone up by 44% in a four-year period. And the crazy thing is, John, is that those numbers don't actually capture how bad the problem is, because there are so many people who don't go to treatment, and then there's so many people who go to treatment outside of the state of New Jersey. So our numbers are really underestimating this problem.
What'd the cops tell you?
The cops said that they've never seen anything like it. Now, I have a hard time with hyperbole sometimes, because you know we had the crack epidemic in the 1980s, heroin kind of resurged a little bit in the 1990s, but this actually is different. And I know that people come on the radio all the time and they talk about this problem. They say it's different, it hasn't been like this. And here's the key thing that separates this from everything else that's gone before. When you say the word heroin, it scares the crap out of most people. And they think about dangerous areas. They think about the inner city. They think about different kinds of people. And with these opiate pills, these are pills that their grandparents are on.
You're talking about the Oxycontins and things like that.
Yes, I'm talking about Percocet, Percodan, Roxycodone, but especially Oxycontin. Oxycontin really is the new king of the drug scene. Because it's in a pill, and because your grandmother does it, or because you know your father got it because he had a back injury, it's instantly okay. People say, "Well, we know what's in it, so I can take it." It's much more readily available, and it's not as scary. But it absolutely is 100% a gateway drug, and I have resisted. I'm on the task force because I'm a therapist and a professor at Rutgers, and I've been in this field for a while. And I've really resisted the term gateway drug for other substances, but for these opiate painkillers, especially Oxycontin, I absolutely feel they are a gateway drug. And people try them, and then they learn what opiates are, and then eventually, maybe they just stay on that, but a lot of them eventually move to heroin because it becomes cheaper.
Well, I was just going to mention that. From what I hear and what I read, the heroin usage, which is up so dramatically, is because those other opiates, the pills that you just mentioned, have gotten so expensive that they can't afford it. It's cheaper to go to the heroin.
You're right. If people get the prescription to pay for it, it's one thing, but eventually the prescription runs out or the insurance companies don't pay anymore, but after they pay for a long time. And so people might try to buy pills on the street. For example, at Rutgers, students tell me that a milligram is worth about $1. So if you buy a 40-milligram pill of Oxycontin, that's going to be about $40. An 80-milligram pill is going to be about $80. Compare that to what you pay for a bag of heroin. You're talking about $7 or $10 for a bag. And so once you're hooked, it becomes much easier to shift to heroin. And that's what people do. I first became aware of this, actually not with a juvenile, but with a 52-year-old male who never had an alcohol problem, never had a criminal record. At 47, he had a back injury. He was given Percocet that eventually became Oxycontin. His doctor cut him off after about a year and a half, which was much, much too long, by the way. And he was on a job site, and someone said, I know, I have something else for you, gave him heroin. And 3 years later, and $180,000, several arrests, a broken marriage, he's in front of me at an outpatient agency in a very rich New Jersey suburb, saying, I can't believe, I am 53 years old, and I can't believe this happened.
Well,
to me.
Frank, there is that exact same story this morning in the New York Times, in an enormous article about Derek Bougard, formerly of the Rangers, again, total addict, hooked on these opiates.
John, we are seeing it in every phase of life, and we are saying it in all kinds of different careers, and that's the part that's very, very scary. And the thing, when I talk about any of these opiate derivatives, because they come from opium, and they all interact on the same part of the brain that endorphins do. Endorphins is a neurotransmitter. It deals with kind of it's a natural painkiller. So, you know, if you or any of your listeners out there are runners or they exercise and they experience what's called like runner's high, that's endorphins in the brain. These opiates act the same way on the brain that those endorphins do. They bond almost perfectly, both physically and psychologically. And so people become dependent very, very quickly. And the whole thing with drug addiction is that we're not talking about people with bad morals and cast out by God. This is a this is a biological interaction that is very hard to resist. It's kind of like if someone takes 10 Axlax, tell them, don't go to the bathroom. They're going to have to go to the bathroom. There's nothing they can do about it.
No, I understand. So, Frank, what do the doctors tell you about this? They're writing the script for most of this stuff.
Well, we have three more hearings. Our next hearing is on July 10th in Mendham, New Jersey, and then we have hearings on August 29th in Manalapan, and we're finishing up the public part of our meeting schedule on October 2nd. So I'd be remiss if I went into all the details and kind of suggestions were going on. We're going to hear from some people who run emergency rooms as well as a number of pharmacists about what they see as the problem, and people are giving us they're not only telling their horror stories, but they're also giving us advice about what they think can be done.
And give me a couple of suggestions you've heard.
So there's a few different areas. There's public policy, there's prevention, there's treatment, there's recovery supports, and so different ideas that people are saying is that there may need to be training of more doctors.
You mean to tell me, because I've talked to doctors about this, and I've heard the suggestion, because this is a situation that exists across this country and in the tri-state area big time, and I've talked to other people about it, and they all say that doctors need to be retrained. Are you kidding me? You mean to tell me that doctors don't know the effect of these opiates?
Well, John, it's a great question. It's extremely frustrating. And on the flip side, doctors are also already given so much extra yearly training that it's something that that group may be resistant to. And so other suggestions could be some places are going to electronic prescription pads instead of just the written ones, because prescription pads are often stolen, they're often altered. How about I tell you a success story? One of the best things that's been done is the prescription drug monitoring programs. So in the past, let's say, I went to a dentist and I told the dentist that my tooth hurt very badly and they gave me a prescription for Percocet. I would go to a pharmacy and refill it. I would fill it. But maybe I would take that same prescription, go to another pharmacy and fill it, or maybe I'd see another dentist or doctor and get another prescription filled. So instead of having one prescription, I might have five or six. Before prescription drug monitoring programs, I would not have gotten caught. But with the states that have those prescription drug monitoring programs, we're finding out who's writing it, who's taking it, how much, and so we're much better able to crack down on that. And so to have those programs funded and expanded make a whole lot of sense and save a lot of money.
All right, Frank. Well, listen, we'll follow this along as you do, because it's ever-growing, and if it's ever-growing, that means it's going to become a bigger and bigger problem and more people would be affected in a negative way. So we'll stay in touch, all right?
John, that would be great, and I'd really appreciate coming in after we wrap this up, because You know, I hate it when you hear from people like me and we sidestep the issue and say, I don't want to talk about the solutions. But again, I will be more than happy to discuss all the ideas that were put out there and the proposals we're doing after the final hearing on October 2nd.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it. Keep after him. Frank Greenadel on this task force on heroin and opiate use. It's huge. We all know that. It's all around us, probably within your family someplace, or certainly circle of friends.
This has been a podcast from WOR.